Good morning and welcome to Brass Tacks, the People's Parliament, for this, the Tuesday, the 20th day of March 2018. I'm your host, your moderator, your Speaker of the House. We go until 2 p.m. this afternoon. DJ is in the chair, and I've called him the Marshal or the Clerk, but he's taking care of things technical, and he's also our producer. Today, we are talking to the political parties in relation to crime and deviance. And we want to be able to allow them to put their perspectives, their policies, and their plans to you, the listening public, as we gear up for the next general election in Barbados. We want the public to be able to listen but also interact. So get close to your telephones, get close to your devices, as you can send your questions, your queries to the political parties at the number 434-1790. That is 434-1790. And of course, you can send your WhatsApp to 266-4862. That is 266-4862. 266-IVOB. Now, in relation to crime in Barbados, just as a short opening comment, my belief is that while we have spates of crime being reported in the media, there's a situation of continuous crime in the country. One of the things I want to commend the panel even before they started is really on the selection. And today joining us is John King from the Barbados Labour Party. Good morning and welcome, sir.
Good morning, Corey. Thank you very much.
We are expected to be joined by Stephen Lashley of the Democratic Labour Party. In studio from the UPP, United Progressive Party, we have Everton Holligan. Good morning and welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good morning to you, Corey.
From Solutions Barbados, we have Mr. Grenville Phillips II.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning and welcome, sir. And we are expected to be joined by Apostle Scanterbury from the Barbados Integrity Movement, BIM. Now, I commend the parties from the outset is that usually when we talk about crime, I usually hear about the Commissioner of Police and the Attorney General. In a case where I see we have lined up persons that are very familiar with youth and community work, where I believe that the work within crime must start in prevention as opposed to penal and judicial. So I'm very happy about that. I want to start the program off. Let's get down to brass tacks with the first question. And that is, in your opinion, what is the state of crime and deviance in Barbados? I'll start with my immediate left, Mr. John King.
All right. Having been working in the system for a number of years, I'm going to speak from what I saw as a person working in the system. To quantify the state of it, I would simply say that for me personally, it is really out of hand at this particular point in time. I think one of the problems that we've had for a number of years is that Barbados is a country which continues to put out papers, green paper, blue paper, white paper, yellow paper. But when it comes to implementing the things that are in the papers, this is where we fall down. And in dealing with our young people and dealing with deviancy and dealing with crime, this is also the case. So until we get serious about what we are doing and begin to implement a lot of the things that have been put in over the 30 years that I've been involved in this type of work, things will happen like this.
Okay. Grenville Phillips of Solution Barbados.
Yes. The problem is that we don't seem to be addressing the root causes of crime. I do work in the prison. The prison population basically remains the same. So we are not addressing the root causes, and that's what we plan to do.
Okay. Mr. Holligan from the United Progressive Party.
Thank you. Good morning, Barbados. I'm happy to have this opportunity. State of crime in Barbados and across the region, because it's not just Barbados. We have emerged from a colonial society. This institution or this country was set up in crime, deviance, and violence. And so Mr. Phillips said we're going to look at the root, and I was expecting to hear more. So the root of this crime We have established that our society was set up out of slavery, colonialism, neocolonialism, and then emerging into, you know, freedom and then independence. And now we're at a point where we're trying to rein in some of the issues. As it relates to the state, I think what we have now is social media and more access to see things that are happening. But crime has always been around. It's been how this nation was birthed. And we have acknowledged that the way to treat this is to go back to that old adage that everyone always speaks about, where they say it takes a village to raise a child. And so we have to reference a cultural perspective in order to create the prescription, the recipe. And I hope we can get into some of that today.
Okay, I want to go on to about another two questions before we open up the telephone lines. And that is for me to get an understanding of how important is tackling crime to your party. So if you had to put it within a ranking system, and the reason I ask this is because a number of polls throw up a number of things that are important to the public. What is important to the public is not necessarily and always translated to what's important to the political party. So sometimes you may see the economy being number one, housing being number two, jobs being number three, and so on and so forth. But if you had to rank, or is there a ranking for your party that you are aware of, where would crime fall?
I would not look at it in that context, Corey, although I understand where you're going with that. But let me put this on the table. Crime is as important as anything that you can think of. Just think of, let's break this down. This is very simple terms. Do you understand the amount of money that is spent yearly to maintain one prisoner in Dodds? Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking serious. You're talking serious money.
My research is telling me $59,613 at last count.
Yeah, exactly. And it is rising. Mm-hmm. It is rising. So from an economic standpoint, if you look at it, you need to deal with it in that. But if you look at the human relationship, and we are talking about our communities, our societies, you look at the trauma that is heaped on children when they lose parents or lose other family members to crime. Not only through them going away to prison, but the persons who might probably lose their lives in the process, lose the ability to work if somebody, you know, were assaulted or whatever. So there's a cost in term there that is not a monetary cost, but it is a confidence cost. It is a how do you live cost that you have to deal with.
Now, before you go too deep, because I want to keep this razor and laser sharp today, and that is the reason I asked for a ranking, even if you're not prepared or in a position to give me one, two, or three, the reason that why that is so important for me is that after the next general election, everybody knows that whoever is the ruling party has a lot of work to do. You have to set priorities. There's the economy to fix. There's a lot of things to fix. Now, you can't go after all on all flanks, in my opinion. So I want to know, in terms of ranking, is it fairly high? Is it medium? Is it low?
It is going to be extremely high.
Okay, let's move on. Granville?
Yes. Well, like I say, as the leader of Solutions Barbados, it will be tackled at the same time that we tackle the economy. Both of those are extremely important. But again, we plan to tackle it by addressing the root cause. And the root cause, yes, we can go all the way down to slavery and even before that. But the root cause, the relevant root cause is, to us, the school curriculum. Because when we have students at school not understanding the work, not understanding the subject because of the manner in which it is being ordered, which means they are being taught the complex theoretical aspects of subjects before the practical, fun, easy information that you learn later, which means that in the first and second and third forms, they eventually lose interest in the subject. And when you have a child that loses interest in sitting down at school, in the classroom, not understanding, they get frustrated. So the root cause is the secondary school's curriculum. And we plan to modify that quickly so that for the first 3 years, there's the more practical aspects being taught, and then the student will maintain interest. Now, yeah, there will always be some who will want to give some trouble, and we have methods for dealing with those. But all this will be addressed the same time that we address the economy, because it's
so you've got important. A number on number ones, in other words.
Yes.
Good.
Not everything, but that is number one. That and the economy, those two are number one.
Asked and answered. Mr. Oligan.
Yes, crime is ranked particularly high on our mood, on our approach. We have to do that because we're looking at our human potential, and we know that our human potential is way beyond where it's at right now. So in every endeavor, the policies that we've put in place is to deal with crime and the economy and those issues, which are really all in one right now. So if you wanted a number between 1 and 10, I'd say it's at 10, just along with the economy and everything else.
10 would mean that it's being taken care of late, because number 1 is what you're dealing with.
Oh, I'm sorry.
One.
So you want 1, right, which is, okay, yes, that. Yes. So then 1.
Okay, good. All right, let me stick with you and ask in terms of the policy and then come back to John, because I think I have the philosophy, sorry, because I understand the philosophy of Solutions Barbados in tackling crime. What will be the philosophy, the grounding philosophy of going after crime in Barbados?
Well, so the understanding is that, I mean, right now in this particular case, we're looking at crime and deviance with children, but we are saying that crime and deviance spans right across the society. Mm-hmm. Children are only absorbing what they see and experience within society. And then reversing back to the comment made earlier, it takes a village. Our policies address building the communities, strengthening communities by making sure that we can provide the resources through non-governmental organizations, through CSOs, and also assisting them to make sure that they can be on the ground within the communities and giving them all access that they need as it relates to Parliament, as it relates to the resources of government, to make sure they can activate and get into communities and start working with the people. We've also have a manifesto on governance, which seeks to include the people of Barbados in making sure that their voices can be heard. And a lot of times, even from canvassing, you know, the young people, they'll say to you straight up, it makes no sense whether I vote or not, things ain't going to change. And so we've developed a community-centered approach, a bottom-up approach in terms of developing policy and adjusting our manifestos to ensure that the people come first, because we believe in the potential of our people. We know that our people are not criminals, but circumstances help to put things in a place where they're now manifesting these types of behaviors.
John, grounding philosophy going forward, tackling crime.
Basically, that each individual has value and each individual is has the potential to be a constructive member of this society. And if you place value on human lives, then your policies and your programs will target bringing out that potential and making the best use of it for the entire country. So similar to what you've heard before, our policies are geared towards bringing out the very best in our people, so that they have options other than, as things said earlier, reverting to crime and these sort of things.
All right, excellent. Now that we're past the generalities, we're going to get into the specifics. When we start to talk now about plans and policies, when we come back to the People's Parliament for this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome back to Brass Tacks, the People's Parliament. Remember, we have in the studio with us, we have Mr. John King from the Barbados Labour Party, Mr. Grenville Phillips from Solution Barbados, Everton Holligan from the United Progressive Party, and we've been joined by Stephen Lashley. Good morning and welcome, sir, from the Democratic Labour Party.
Morning, and it's good to be here.
Good to be back.
To be back.
Welcome back.
This is always my home territory.
Yes. Now, in the opening of the program, we basically asked three questions. I'll give you the opportunity to sum up your opening comments by touching on each of the three of these. And basically, we spoke about what is the state of crime, in your opinion. How do you rank crime going forward as a phenomenon that must be dealt with? And what is the grounding philosophy going forward to tackle crime in Barbados?
Right. First of all, let me again say I'm very pleased to be here. And I wanted, the first thing that I had to say in relation to this particular program, I wanted to compliment the Voice of Barbados for this initiative, which to my mind brings a better focus and balance on what is required as we debate several of the issues relating to the country of Barbados. The issue of crime remains, of course, a big issue in Barbados. I certainly am of the view that the tackling of crime in all areas remain a key priority of the government of Barbados. It has been our focus, certainly over the past 10 years. And we have approached crime reduction from a number of perspectives, both at the legislative level, as well as the level of reaching out to communities through a diverse cadre of programs. The issue of crime reduction is not only a legislative issue, it's not only a police matter. It has to be tackled at the sources. And many of our programs are focused in that direction. You will recall that certainly from the perspective of the Youth Division in the ministry that I lead, we've done a number of intervention programs. And over the time, we have been able to reap quite a bit of success. But of course, the issue of the level of crime remains an issue. You will recall that the historical data on crime, certainly the last report of the National Commission on Law and Order, found that over the last 25 years, so the phenomenon of crime spans a really long period of time, that the level of crime, in particularly serious crimes, have been quite high, particularly those areas of murder, armed robberies, and reckless violence among young people. So the issue, as I see it, Corey, is a key issue for us. We continue, of course, to ensure that the Royal Barbados Police Force is properly equipped to deal with it. But of course, crime is pervasive. We have, of course, recognized that a key part of crime is prevention of crime. And I did hear a bit of the in the program where I think one of the panel would have talked of the whole question of how do we tackle crime from the source? How do we prevent crime? And many of our programs have been focused on that. Our youth intervention programs have been looking at that, and there are a number of them that I would speak to in the program. But the National Youth Policy of Barbados, which was crafted just about 6 years ago and inspired by the young people of Barbados, would have pinpointed the whole question of crime and crime prevention as being a key area. And we approved that policy, and we set about to look at ways in which we could move our young people away from crime. Since then, of course, there have been several areas in terms of legislative interventions. We would have taken to Parliament legislation to make some changes in relation to the law pertaining to the removal of offences from the law books in terms of persons who were offended. Reduce the actual period in which, of course, persons can have their offences.
That was reduced from what to what?
I think it was reduced from 5 years to 3 years, in which it could be considered by the panel. And then, of course, we do have currently before our the House a bill which deals with the whole question of juvenile justice, mm-hmm. which is a very wide bit of legislation determined to look at a number of facets in terms of children who may commit offences and so on. So that has been a key focus of certainly the Attorney General and his office, but crime is multifaceted, and I did hear you say quite correctly that the issue of crime and dealing with crime is not just a question for the police or the Attorney General or his staff. It is really a national issue to be tackled by a multifaceted approach. And we've adopted that approach within the government.
Okay, it's time to bring the people into the People's Parliament. So 25 minutes after 10, let's say good morning and welcome to our first caller. You're on the air.
Hello, hi, good morning, Corey.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning to your panel.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, before I go into my two little tidbits, I want to compliment the technical people that deal with the man or the telephone system in the studio, because you can follow the program and it is crystal clear, buddy, and that is a plus for the program. I think that is a step in the right direction.
Thank you on their behalf.
I've been able to follow the program, you know, without listening softly to the radio, so that is good. However, though, could I refer to you as the speaker? Since we're in Parliament?
No problem at all.
So if I refer to you as Speaker, would that make me a backbench our minister.
You in a unique position where the gallery gets to speak to the parliamentarians.
Oh, in the gallery.
You in gallery.
Well, I got news for you, though. All of you in the gallery know.
It's true.
I certainly cannot refer to anybody in this country as any minister. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Because member of parliament and all of that, that gone through the door.
Okay, Wesley, let's get down to brass tacks.
Yeah, and a special welcome to my good friend, John King.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Good. I want to say this, right? And I welcome a show like this. I want to I know nothing about crime and violence, so I ain't going there. I want to know from the members of your panel, and they could be able to make my thing and then go on, right? This whole question about public skunks committee, I want to know what is their gut feeling about that.
Wesley, yeah. You, on a point of order, you cannot come and try to introduce apples on a day on the beach. You know, we on a whole different ship here. You understand? No, I want to get to that under a different topic, which really speaks to white collar crime. Because as all the panelists spoke, we spoke as though crime only happens within these young black boys in Barbados. And we need to recognize that there is something called white collar crime as well, which a lot of people, as you move around Barbados, have the impression that they can do as they like and operate with impunity. And as soon as you take up a pack of Shirley biscuits, you should be lost way in prison. So if we can talk about crime and deviance, then we're going to talk about that other side of the coin. So let's actually go there right now before we get back to the people in the People's Parliament. So, everything
right. So that is a key point, because people and young people across the society are looking at inequalities stretching across, where there's only certain segments of society that feel victimized, and there are certain segments of society that seem to be progressing. The ones that are progressing or seem to be progressing may be involved in deviant behavior as well, but it's not logged as that. And then the younger ones who are constantly being victimized, their way of upward mobility sometimes is looking towards those who seemingly progress, even though, you know, they are not considered criminals, or they're what's happening to them doesn't seem as though they get any kind of reprimand for it. So the caller was leading straight into stuff like corruption, which sometimes, you know, we don't hear anything about that. When there's police involvement, sometimes you don't hear anything about that. And then sometimes there are businesses involved in stuff, and then they often get brushed under the carpet. But then there's the inequality now, where young people can get called out for things and be somewhat victimized. So when you have a situation like this where the inequality is being put forward, then it further exacerbates the situation within communities. Now, our policies that look towards continuous education within society, which helps to develop life skills within communities, is one of the policies that we've put in place to help address some of the issues associated with feeling as though young people feeling as though they're not being heard or seen. We need to then further translate what's going on in the world to them. So we have to have centers within our communities that's geared towards continuous education and life skills, so they don't feel left out. I'll cut there so others can
get it. Don't cut there yet. I want to get more from you. How do you all plan to tackle and deal with white collar crime?
Tackling and dealing, but we've said initially that once we get into office, the whole idea of giving the Auditor General teeth to act on behalf of the people and to lock up those who are found guilty when there are issues of discrepancies being found out. We've already said that that's the first order of business, because again, this stretches straight across the society, where these things are happening within the higher offices, but no one is being held accountable for it. And so young people feel as though, I don't really care, because look at what's happening. These things are continuously going on. Nobody is being brought to justice for it. And so it removes them. There's an apathy that's there as it relates to the whole governance. And
policy number one on white collar crime is to give more authority and teeth to the Auditor General.
For sure.
Granville Phillips.
Yes. We plan to treat all criminals the same. So whether it's white collar or any other collar, all criminals will be treated the same, which means that we will attach a fine to the cost of the crime. The fine is normally about 10 times the value. So every offense carries a value. If you're going to steal a cell phone, that's worth $700. You pay back 10 times the value of that, which is $7,000. And if you look at some of the sentences that are meted out, that's about what it is. We will have the same sort of thing for those who are engaged in corruption. The problem is that how can you catch corrupt persons? That has always been the problem. For the past 50 years or so, we had no way of catching them. None have been caught so far after 50 years because the method is ineffective. The method that's proven for catching those who are involved in corruption is whistleblower legislation. But the reward must be worth the whistleblower's time and risk. So we are saying that the whistleblower gets a reward, and the reward is the same value of the bribe. So if someone gives a bribe of $100,000, the whistleblower gets $100,000. However, the fine goes up to 10 times that amount, which is if it's $100,000, it's $1 million. 10 times 100,000. That should both serve as a disincentive, as well as allowing us to recoup money if any corruption has taken place in the past. So,
just on a note of logistics and so on, normally when laws are made, the judiciary, the magistrate, the judge is usually given a range, a minimum, a maximum. And how do you plan to get this 10 times the fine implemented through the judiciary?
Right, so that would be the almost fixed guideline.
Mm-hmm.
So a law would be passed.
Mandatory fine.
Yes, mandatory fine. So once you're engaged in corruption, it's a mandatory fine of 10 times the value, because we don't want the people to end up in Dodds, really. Dodds is reserved, or should be reserved, for the violent only. So
For the people that can't pay the fine.
No, if you can't pay the fine, we'll find work for you to do.
Okay.
Like right away, we intend to release almost 800 prisoners who are nonviolent. Mm. So that they can work perhaps on the Empire Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of free labour.
Mr. King.
Corey, this conversation, though, is going in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I've heard so far are all punitive answers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about tackling crime and preventing crime, all crime starts in the mind. You have to change the way people think. You have to change the way people view themselves. You have to change the way, as Haru was saying earlier, the opportunities are perceived. Because it's all right for people to say, all right, there's white collar crime and this thing ain't happening and next thing ain't happening. There are laws in place to deal with these things for eons, probably before he was born. So the thing is, do we have the willingness to prosecute the persons when found?
And to update the law, because
the problem is
it was before you was born. So then you got fines of $500 for Kane for embezzling $5 million.
Agreed, but it still does not that is not the problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you can still work with prevention, although it's white collar.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You still have to work with the prevention. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, we have spent a lot of time, Granville spoke about it earlier. But he spoke specifically about academic education. But there's an informal education that has nothing to do with physics, chemistry, speaking Spanish, or nothing. This is a conversation that Barbados refuses to have. Who is a Barbadian? What is he about? What is he to the rest of the world? What is he believing? What does he stand for? These are the things that you need to do. And I've said this time and time again, the church and religion has a part to play. Civics is important in creating that conversation and saying, what do we do? These are all part and parcels, tackling poverty, tackling wrong thinking. These are the things that you need to do, have the programs in place if you really are serious about tackling crime. And it has to start, again, not only within the school system has a part to play with it, but it has to start with putting the resources in the communities, in your churches, wherever people are. There are certain things that must go to them all the time. Make use of social media, make use of your television, your radio, PSAs, whatever it is. The same way that people can advertise a big show and everybody was know about this show and everything. You have to advertise values.
I need you to touch on the other side, though. You did say that they went one side, but you went the other side, and only the other side. They want you to speak to those who still get involved in white collar crime after you work on the prevention? How do you plan to tackle that? We have the laws.
The laws are there.
Mm-hmm, they're there.
All right. You have to deal with the mechanisms that are put in place. One, to identify, prosecute, and then take whatever actions you view as being necessary if it is punitive or otherwise.
I'm not trying to be difficult, right? But this program is not about what needs to be done. I want to hear what the parties plan to do. That's what the listeners, that's what people want to know.
Hold on, Corey.
I want to know what you and the Barbados Labour Party will do.
Yeah, but you cannot have that type of a conversation, say, this is what you're going to do, without first getting your listeners to understand exactly what it is.
But you just got them to do that, so you need to move on, change the gear.
Cool, no problem. So, as mentioned earlier, yes, you have to look at the Auditor General's reports and stuff, give them a little bit more teeth, but you also have to produce straight legislation to deal with corruption, and those are the things that we will be doing. Stiffer penalties, a better way of identifying these things and dealing with it. And those are the basic things that we have to do.
That wasn't that hard, Mr. Lashley.
Yes, this is a very interesting discussion. Now, I want to also give my opinion on this issue of corruption. I've heard a lot of it being talked about in Barbados. Now, there is currently on the statute books Anti-Corruption Act, Prevention of Corruption Act. Of course, it is a dated piece of legislation, but the legislation itself is there in relation to creating a criminal offense in relation to corruption.
This is the one that was passed in 2012?
No, not that one. Then? It's the one before that.
The
earlier one. The 1929? The 2012 one is not.
Right, but my understanding is the one before the one in 2012 was 1929.
Right, fine. And that's why I said it's dated.
Right.
But the point I want to make is that the issue of corruption and preventing corruption is ordered by legislation that is currently on the statute books. And persons are talking about corruption, and of course, to be able to create or to find an offense of corruption, there must be the evidence of the corruption in the first place. And over the years, I don't believe that anybody has been prosecuted under that legislation. If they have been, probably very few, in relation to corruption in Barbados. I'm not saying that there may or may not be corruption. All I'm saying is that I'm still to find evidence of persons being brought before the law courts for corruption. And I also know that over the years, there has been allegations about corruption. People are free to make allegations of corruption, but people need to engage the system, the criminal justice system, if they have evidence of corruption, and put that information before the police, before the Director of Public Prosecutions, to allow for investigation of allegations of corruption. And what we have done in government of late, and of course we've been criticized for not proclaiming the 2012 Prevention of Corruption Act, which seeks to not only increase the penalties, it actually throws a very wide net in relation to those persons who may be prosecuted for corruption. That legislation went through, that draft went through a whole set of public consultation. Interestingly enough, we have been talking about the need to consult widely on legislation before we bring it to the parliament and before we proclaim it. But this particular legislation is an example of legislation that not only was put out there for public comment, but a lot of discussion and debate ensued in relation to this particular legislation. And the reason why the debate pursued in relation to this is that this particular act not only enforces a number of international obligations and standards, but it casts a very wide net as to who are persons who may be found guilty of corruption. And there is a provision in there which speaks to the persons in public life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this bill went to Select Committee in the House. because there was significant public protests over the extent and the reach of this particular legislation. Persons felt that they were being, not only did it deal with public officials, parliamentarians, and members of parliament, but it dealt with some very high...
So that's the reason it wasn't proclaimed?
Well, it was not proclaimed because it was subjected to scrutiny for a long time.
I remember a lot of public protests in relation to the Police Act and so on. That was proclaimed too. A lot of people in the street been asking. It's Sunday we had a discussion, and I'm glad we have the persons here to answer. No. Yeah. Seemed like laws against the people, like the, you know, the helmet tax and this thing and this helmet, all those things could get through Parliament fairly quickly.
Against the people?
Yeah, they call it the laws against the people. No, this is other people's words, not mine. Okay. The laws against the people. But then the laws against the what they call the bigwigs have to be subjective because there's opposition. What the difference? It seems a little discriminatory to me.
There's no difference. Yeah. I think what happened in relation to the amendments to the Police Act as well as the amendment to the Road Traffic Act is that there were, in fact, a lot of public conversations and consultation on those legislation. Some people argue maybe they were not enough. But of course, the issues pertaining to the amendments to the Police Act were cast within a particular frame where not only was there significant concerns in communities in relation to the level of crime and the types of crime, but there was a call repeatedly for the government to act very quickly to deal with the issues.
But I've been hearing the public call against this white collar crime as well and corruption in high places.
But having addressed that, let me go to the Prevention of Corruption Act, because I do agree with you there has been call. I was given the context in which the legislation was around for a long time because we felt that we should ensure that everybody understood what this legislation was about. I was part of the select committee, and we took evidence. We went out there. We had persons come in and talk about their issues, and we documented that. Now, the issue of the Prevention of Corruption, I wanted to give an idea of the persons in public life that will be touched by this legislation once it is proclaimed. It will impact chairmen, board members, and chief executives of statutory boards and companies controlled by government. It will impact on heads of government, heads of departments in government, judges, magistrates, members of parliament, members of the Prevention of Corruption Commission, permanent secretaries and officers of related grades, president and chief executive officers of a registered trade union. Now, the last one created quite a lot of debate as to whether or not the legislation should touch on trade unions.
Let me interrupt here. You're educating us to this to tell us this is the way y'all plan to deal with corruption.
Well, we are very focused on proclaiming that.
Proclaiming
legislation.
That, right?
The legislation, of course, will create a legislative framework that will bring in very, very extensive array of penalties and offenses for corruption, and of course, it creates an independent commission, because one of the issues has always been, who is actually implementing and policing this legislation? For the first time, an independent commission will be put in place of persons who are independent-minded in terms of what they do and so on. And they're the ones who will be responsible for ensuring that those who offend are brought to justice. And it will not be just simply the police services or whatever. The commission will be the one responsible.
All right, thank you. You're listening to The People's Parliament on this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. 12 minutes to 11 o'clock. The People's Parliament is in session. Granville, you wanted to say something, but before you do, let me introduce Apostle Scanterbury. He has joined us.
Yes, sir.
I hope you're listening to the discussion on your way here, and I'd like you to weigh in with some opening comments.
Well, first of all, let me say good morning to everyone and to the panelists here today. One of the things that the Barbados Interrogatory Movement is going to be very strong on is definitely dealing with the area of crime prevention. And as we've heard in recent times, the issue of corruption in Barbados. The last time that I was here on the broadcast on Brass Tacks, I made it clear that we have to look again very strongly at where we are taking Barbados as a nation. And you cannot expect a people to be governed properly if you have no vision for them. We go back to that old statement of where there's no vision, the people perish. And we are constantly in this situation over and over here in Barbados where For the last 25 years, we have not had a clear vision as to where this country has been going by our governmental system. I think the time for that to change is here. Again, and I heard Mr. King spoke about the issue of changing minds and renewing minds and getting people to think properly. And we can't get people to think properly unless they have something that they can focus on. And if our people have nothing to focus on, then their minds are going to go either way. Now, the reality of crime is that crime has a source. All crime has a source. And as we would have known in relation to what we call high-end crime and low-end crime, the system that brings crime into our experience is very, very organized. And we're not seeing these things within our schools. We're not seeing them within our communities because people just want to go out there and be involved in crime or be involved in corruption. We are seeing these things because it's a very clearly devised system behind these things happening. And the Barbados Integrity Movement is going to be very strong on developing systems from our primary school level and also within the community level to make sure that we can combat crime on a mental level, first of all, and then secondly, on a spiritual level, and then we can go into the economic level. I don't think we can fix Barbados by just improving our economic position. We have to fix crime and corruption from a psychic position first, and then we can branch into those other areas. Because if our people have no idea where they're going, I mean, there's really nothing that can stop people's minds from running wild. And this is one of the things that we haven't seen in a very long time here in Barbados. If you ask people where they're going, they can't really tell you. I remember when I was first canvassing, I met a gentleman who was a driver of the crane in the port. And he started to cry because he said, "I'm hurt because I remember the year that Barbados amassed over 290,000 tons of sugar." And he said, I'm hurt because back then, if you ask anyone if Barbados was destined to be a prosperous nation, the answer would have been yes. He said, "Now I'm hurt that I know I'm going to die in a country that is struggling to produce 29,000 tons of sugar." And he started to cry because he said he never expected to be living in a Barbados like what we have today. So before we had vision, we knew where we were going. Today, we are not told where we are going. So therefore, you've opened a door to all types of activity, whether it's drugs, whether it's violence, whether it's within the schools, whether it's within the business sector, whether it's within parliament. All of these doors are now open for individuals to run wild. And one of the things I want to finally say here in Barbados, anti-corruption legislation, all of these things are good. But the reality is that people must be prosecuted. If people aren't prosecuted in Barbados, the system has failed. And that's one of the things that we've seen here in Barbados time and time again. We've seen individuals involved in crime. We've seen individuals involved in very dangerous activity here in the island. We've seen them go to court, but we've seen those cases pan on for years and nobody has ever brought to justice. And that's one of the things that I believe we have a very big problem here in Barbados with, the fact that people are not brought to justice when they have been convicted of these serious crimes. So I think it's very important as we sit here today to make sure that the public in Barbados understand that there are systems that are now being put in place to deal with these situations on every level that they need to be dealt with.
All right. I just want to say something in relation to what was said just now. Because
wait, hold a minute. Granville wanted to come in after. They want to keep a certain order.
We're not going to interrupt.
No gully boring.
We could not interrupt.
We could interrupt. I don't mind the interruption, but we just the honorable member has the floor.
Right. Thank you. This hopelessness among many Barbadians, because again, we feel it too when we go out there and meet them, is facilitated by non-action on all this corruption and the poor management of government services. I mean, every election cycle, you will have whoever is in opposition going on platforms and waving evidence of corruption, claiming that they have evidence of corruption, incontrovertible evidence of corruption, which should normally see a conviction. And then when they are voted in, suddenly all that goes away for 10 or maybe 14 years. And then, meanwhile, the new opposition party claims to be gathering all this evidence of corruption, and then during the time of elections, they start waving it around again and exciting the public that they're going to do something about it because they really hate corruption. Yet, when we elect them again, suddenly all the evidence goes away. So both the Barbados Labour Party and the Democratic Labour Party have continued this cycle of explaining how much corruption there is and accusing the other of gross corruption and mismanagement. And yet when they get in, they don't do anything. Now, I'm happy that we have both representatives or representatives of both of the parties here, but I don't see how they're going to do anything about it. That's why we went to the root cause, identified the most effective solution, not just ineffective legislation that we'll just keep talking about and promising to do something with. I looked at it. I looked at the legislation that the Barbados Labour Party had on, and I commented on it on their webpage. It's completely ineffective. So many loopholes. And then yet they say that they're going to pass that as soon as they get in. Full of loopholes. So they don't plan to do anything about it, it seems.
Granville, do not make statements that just suggest that. What are the loopholes?
People are
listening.
Yes.
What are the loopholes in your opinion?
Yes. The loopholes are there to ensure that the guilty go free. For example, it's not investigated by the police. It's investigated by an inspector. First of all, let me get to it. You have persons on this panel of this commission who are appointed by the political parties. So if it is that the politicians are accusing other politicians of being corrupt, and you have a commission stacked with politicians, who do you expect that they will investigate themselves?
So are you saying then, Granville, saying that you are also a politician?
Yeah.
Are you suggesting that politicians have absolutely no integrity and that they therefore cannot put systems in place to police themselves? Because if that is what you're saying, it means that not only in Barbados, but all across the world, where we can see in America, if you wanted to take an example of what is going on over there with Trump and that none of it can actually work.